So thank you. Hi everybody, welcome along to class. For those online, hello. So as Beverly has said, today's all about karma. We're off to class three. So all of us listening to this class and watching it, we're all human beings, and for many of us, we would have a life that's called rare and precious. So it's called rare and precious because it's not often that one finds oneself as being a human being with the causes and conditions in place whereby we can bring about our own higher rebirth, liberation, or enlightenment. You guys find it hard to hear me, or am
Yeah,
I?
very hard.
It was a bit dullish, I don't know. But the idea is, once we become Buddhists and take refuge, that we act in accordance with the teachings on karma. Actually, this really determines whether we are Buddhists or not. Now, as a Buddhist, we want to, like I said, in the long term, liberate ourselves from cyclic existence and help others do the same. So that liberation depends upon different causes and conditions. What hinders our liberation are other causes and conditions. And that's what we need to get rid of. We need to pacify or bring to an end causes and conditions which prevent our higher realm rebirth, our liberation, and our enlightenment. So this course is about talking about some of those causes and conditions and what they produce and how we can bring them into the negative side and produce the positive side. So to begin with, we will take refuge together. We'll generate a mind of enlightenment. We'll engage in the seven-limb prayer and the mandala offering, and then we can bring it in our class. But please get comfortable in the seat, which basically means make sure your back is straight and your shoulders are relaxed. Continue to breathe normally and naturally. And as you're breathing, become aware of the movements that take place whenever you inhale or exhale. Maybe you can bring your attention down to your feet or your bottom. Just try and find out where you're touching something solid, like the seat, like the floor. And having that sense of solidity, breathe normally and naturally. So these instructions are just to help you relax and to be focused. And being relaxed and focused, it's easy to imagine the presence of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas in the space above you. It's just as easy to imagine that you're surrounded by all living beings. What you have in common with every living being surrounding you is a wish to be happy and a wish to be free from suffering. What you also have in common with others is that you lack genuine happiness, meaning that the happiness you presently experience is subject to change. It can change not just into a neutral state, but to states of unhappiness and pain and distress. So to actualize genuine happiness, which abides within us actually, we need to get rid of anything that hinders that genuine happiness. And then impart our experience to all other sentient beings surrounding us. So decide to develop your wisdom and your compassion and every other skill you have until you attain that sublime state of full awakening, whereby you're able to effortlessly and spontaneously help others. But having decided to do that, we'll take refuge in the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, all the enlightened beings, and the teachings that they relied upon to attain that state. So reciting along with me, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the Sintu, the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this wish, lights and nectars pour out from the heart of the Buddha, and they wash over you. And there will be every hindrance and obstacle for you, which prevents you becoming an authentic refugee. Having all obstacles removed, consider all the beings who surround you. Make a wish that they could be free from suffering, that they'd be happy, that they could abide in immeasurable, long-lasting joy, and they could develop equanimity. Decide to do these things yourself. And again, wish to establish all beings in these four immeasurable states. In response to these wishes, again, lights and nectars pour forth from the Buddha, they wash over you and over all beings surrounding you. And you find yourself established in these four immeasurable states. You have immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. So while you're in front of the refuge field, think you're about to make prostrations and make offerings and confession and so forth. And joining me in the seven limb prayer, say with me, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since the beginning of this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle of existence and turn the wheel of Dharma to living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. And then to free ourselves of any type of clinging we might have to our virtue, to our body, to anything, in fact, we'll make an offering of a mandala. So reciting with me, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents of Southern Meru. I imagine this is a Buddha field of offered. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Mandala Kamayataya Omni. So we've released this mandala, which is an offering of all the world systems. And the Buddha accepts it. And he looks down at you and smiles. And you look up into his eyes and you feel accepted and at ease. And then an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart, moves through space, and comes to abide above the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. This emanation descends, entering the crown of your head, coming down through your body, and rests at the level of your heart. The radiance of this emanation body begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light. and the light goes out through the pores of your skin and begins to fill the 10 directions of space. And wherever beings exist within space, think that this light touches them and transforms them to the fully awakened state. And there's now no difference between yourself and any other living being. Now the light begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space. It re-enters your body at the level of the heart, sinks into your heart. And while you continue to breathe normally and naturally, you can now feel the seat that's underneath you. You can feel the floor, and you know that you are embodied. And you're breathing normally and naturally. And you can easily acknowledge that this meditation was taking place on the level of imagination and has left an imprint in your mind, so that sometime in the future, when the necessary causes and conditions come together, you will actually attain the state of enlightenment for the benefit of others and bring them into the enlightened state. So accept that, smile, and then breathe in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth, allow your eyes to flutter open, and find yourself in front of the screen or in our class. Okie dokie, let's begin. So what we've done already, so we're up to class 3. So we've looked at actually what karma is. So there's different ways of explaining karma. The simplest way, the most common, is that it's just an action. And karma is a subset of cause and effect. So in general, we can have cause and effect that covers anything that's produced. So the world is produced depending upon its causes and conditions. So, but the world is not karma. Karma has to do with people, and especially with feelings. So karma is like very important. It describes how we cause suffering for ourselves, how we can free ourselves from that suffering, how we can produce all the good qualities. And all of this depends primarily upon the intention that you bring to any action. So this is the most important part of what we call karma, the intention for an act. And when we act, the act has a cause. And acts depend upon their causes and their conditions. We call these substantial causes and contributory causes. The difference between them is a substantial cause actually turns into the effect and the contributory causes don't. So if, like for instance, in terms of a plant growing in a garden, the substantial cause is the seed for it. The seed turns into the plant. The soil, the sunlight, the water, they don't turn into the plant. They contribute to the changing of the seed and the growth of the plant and the flower and so forth. So in terms of us, if we take the act of killing, for instance, it has a substantial cause and it also has contributory causes. We'll talk more about that shortly. We also can talk about the four principles of karma, which is what we talked about last week. And as we talked there about the analogy of the seed and the medicinal tree. And these four principles are probably the most important thing you want to ever take away from these classes, especially as a beginner. So these are that happiness always comes from virtue and never non-virtue. So that's what they mean by the certainty of karma. It's never the other way. You never ever do something with a virtuous aspiration its effect or its result will be suffering. But happiness always comes from virtue, never non-virtue, and suffering always comes from non-virtue and never virtue. That's the certainty of karma. The second is karma increases, meaning a small action can bring very large results, in the same way that a tiny seed can produce a very large tree or even a forest. The third is that if you don't create the cause, you don't get the result. And last, the karmic seeds don't just go to waste, meaning that if you create a cause for an outcome, that cause will remain potent unless it's hindered in some way. Like I said, if we had rose bushes depend upon seeds, rose seeds, you know? Okay, I'm not very horticultural. But if you did have a rose seed, right, we know that it has the potential to produce a rose bush. We ask, well, will it always produce a rose bush? You can say no. Well, if it's in its packet in the cupboard, it's not going to produce a rose bush. And so it really does need, it won't go to waste, but it doesn't mean to say it's not going to come to fruition either. That's what we've looked at so far. And as you were saying last week, it's a lot. And tonight, it's even more. So I'm sorry about that. If you haven't done a course like this before, just sort of relax, I guess, and go, oh, my God. Yeah. So these are the books I've been relying upon. They're all very good, very useful. These two up the top, Buddhism and the Foundation of Buddhist Practice, they belong to a new series called the Library of Compassion and Wisdom. And they are terrific. So I use them a lot. This other one here, Practical Ethics, Profound Emptiness. I really like this because the section on attachment is just wow. And so it really tells you the problems of being attached, having desirous attachment, what the outcomes are and so forth. You know, they're all very, very good. I've relied upon them. But today we're going to start looking at the 10 non-virtuous karmic paths. And in particular, we're going to be looking at the harmful paths of physical non-virtue. And amongst those, this one, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Now, I picked this one because we're not likely to do the other two. This is the one I think we're more likely to engage in. But, well, let's talk about it. And so we will. Now, so it's important to remember why we are talking about this. So as a Buddhist practitioner, what are we trying to do? What's the goal?
Enlightenment.
To become a Buddha. That's the number one goal. Now that's a massive goal. On the way to that goal, we can achieve a subsidiary goal. It's called liberation. We can liberate ourselves from every form of suffering. The difference between being liberated and being a Buddha is that you've liberated yourself from all the causes of suffering, just like Western's never really done, but you have the power to help everyone else do the same. And you are actually doing that. Whereas the person who's brought about their own liberation is not doing that. They've accomplished their goal, their own welfare. It's finished for them. The other hasn't achieved both goals, but he's in the process of doing so. He's achieved his own welfare, and now he can help others achieve theirs. So that's his job. So you might wonder, well, what about all those people that have achieved their liberation and they're not helping anyone? Like, well, where are they? What's going on? So the highest path of all the Buddhist studies, the middle way consequence system of tenets, says that all those beings have what they call a mental body. And they're just blissing out. But the Buddhas come along and go, oi, I know you've achieved your goal, but there's all these others who require your assistance, require your help. You've had relationships with all these other people, and you've got the karma to actually help them. So I need you to wake up and get up and now engage in the Sangha Pasha and become a fully awakened Buddha. So that's how they explain this thing, right? And then those people will be, and they engage, they achieve Buddhahood themselves, they help other people do the same. So those are massive goals, and they will probably take quite a few lifetimes for us to accomplish them. So being really massive goals, we need to keep advancing towards those goals. But we only have seems like we've only got this one lifetime. So here we are, we're all subject to death and impermanence. So this life will come to an end. Yeah, okay, so what happens then? I haven't done enough work to be liberated or become a Buddha, so what happens after death? So, you'll have another life. You'll be reborn again. And you'll ask, as what or where? As well, there's a lot of places you can be reborn, a lot of types of life you can have again, but the very best one is one that you've got like now, as a human being with a leisure and opportunity to engage in a spiritual path. And you say, that's good. So I've got it right here. Perhaps I could do it again. So yeah, you could. But if you wish to do it again, you've got to start acting in accordance with the Buddhist teachings of karma, cause and effect. Because the rebirth you're seeking is an effect, and that requires causes. And it's a good result to be reborn as a human being with a leisure and opportunity to engage in the spiritual path. That's a great result. What could stop it? You say, unwise and unkind sexual behavior could stop it. You won't find yourself not born as a human being because of that. You won't find yourself as an animal. What else could stop you? Killing, stealing, huge lies, acting with malice, envy, having wrong ideas, and acting on it. All of these things get in the way. So at the time of the death, you don't have a virtuous cause to produce the effect you're seeking. Higher realm rebirth as a human being with a leisure and opportunity to engage in a spiritual path. So when we start talking about unwise and unkind sexual behavior, this is what you've got to remember, right? It's not just about now. It's about the future. The major thing that keeps people in cyclic existence is attachment to pleasure. We are in what they call the realm of desire. And what makes it incredibly hard to transcend that is because all of our senses are seeking out pleasant effects. So we like tasty food, we like nice smells, we like to see nice things, we like to hear good sounds. We like to touch pleasant cloths. And you've got, as well as that, then we've got this massive sexual drive going on along with it. So all of that, on top of that, is this craving for it, because we like it. So that makes it very, very hard to develop what we call a renunciation of that. But none of us like suffering, but we all like what we call pleasure, which is contaminated with grasping and clinging. So that keeps you here. So when we engage in this course, it's really about this, you see all the prohibitions, you might be going, but what would you do? That doesn't seem really fair, or that doesn't seem right. The whole thing here is it's not really for normal people, right? It's for people who are thinking about their future lives and knowing, man, the thing that really keeps me stuck in this is clinging to desire, craving for pleasure.
So is this really for like renunciates
Yeah,
or trainee renunciates?
training renunciates. So it's not that it's not the sex is the problem, because it's not. It's not even that desire is the problem, because there's good desires you can have. What's the problem is clinging to it, craving it. But then you set up these what we call the karma, the behavioral patterns. So just it's it'll probably slip out of your mind again, but it's just how it happens. Like I said, the major when we look at the Pali tradition, you go, what's the major cause of all of our suffering? There it's attachment, desirous attachment. In the Mahayana, this tradition, it's ignorance. What they're very like together. It's like ignoring the effects of your craving, your attachment, not knowing what they actually produce. So that's like on the ignorance side. And misapprehending what's going on. Think, oh, it's just going to be nice. So I wrote a quote up the other day. It said, first there is the pleasant experience, then there is crying. Wow, that's great.
You're the life of the
Maybe someone's going to remember that. You know, I did find that go, yeah, it felt great at the time, but boy, it was problematic later. let's begin and let's talk about what we these 10 different paths. So we're going to look at what these paths are, and some of them they're called like paths of action. And there are basically well, different ones numbered. So some what they call white actions. So this is just another white, that's another term for virtue, virtuous white actions. And these produce the desirable effects of happiness. The non-virtuous, the black actions producing suffering and pain, and then neutral actions which do neither. So if you could ask yourself, well, what is virtuous? Interesting answer they give. It is the abstinence, meaning not doing something. But this is the virtue is to not do or abstinence from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from unwise sexual conduct, from false speech, from divisive speech, from harsh speech, from idle talk, non-covetousness, goodwill, and right views. And what is the non-virtuous? Well, the destruction of life, taking what is not given, unwise sexual conduct, false speech. So it's quite interesting that it goes along. So it's like the starting point is if you want to be virtuous, don't do these particular things.
Yeah, I remember Venerable Ravina saying in one of the teachings when someone felt really bad about themselves, and she put them on the spot and said, "Have you killed anyone? Do you steal stuff? Have you cheated on your husband?" No, well, in that case, you're already halfway, you're already a good human being.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
what? Don't get you. What?
Okay, sleeping. Sleeping. It's a neutral action, yep. Yep.
Can you lose the voice?
I don't think so, I hope not.
I can't hear this, like nothing happening.
Excuse me, now there is. Oh. Yeah, so to restrain it. So it's very good. Just look at yourself and what you don't do. Because you sort of think, oh, you know, a little maybe a bad outcome there. So we don't do it. That's virtue right there. And what creates it, it's like you've got this idea of you're sort of looking ahead a little and seeing the problem. You know, if I get engaged, if I do this thing, like if I steal, what might happen? Now, well, the first thing, what might happen is you get caught. That's what might happen. And then you take it from there and you go, and if I get caught, then what happens? And you go, no. You know, I'm not gonna take that thing. And it's the same with sexual misconduct. It's like all of them. It's like what really determines that they're negative is the effect. You jump ahead, way ahead, you go, these are the effects. Oh my gosh, I don't want those effects. Then don't do this. Don't do the cause. Don't create the cause. It's really that sort of simple, and it works that way too. So as a kid, I remember one time, so I got caught stealing comics. Oh boy, what a hassle that was. Anyway, yeah, of course, yeah, mum and dad are really upset, so dad especially. It's like, so he grabs me, twists my ear, and leads me like all the way through town up to the police station. It takes me into the police station. Right? And then they tell me what happens to people who steal things. You know, I didn't steal any more things after this. It's like the embarrassment of it, the shame of it, getting up there, and then you know, you're taken to the police station, and there's the cell with this great big Maori warden there. And you know, he's going like he gave me a whack. You know, my dad's just thinking, yeah. You know? And it's just like, oh my God, okay, so I just stopped me stealing. And it's the same sort of thing here. You know, we're trying to find out, well, what are the effects? So I'll show you the effects tonight. And that's the thing, you go, I don't want that. So it's not worth it to steal or to engage in unwise sexual behavior. The outcomes are just too problematic. Oftentimes you'll see in the text that when they talk about different phenomena, they often use metaphors or similes. So they use the color here, white action, white meaning like pure virtue. Then they talk black actions, this sort of thing, right? Now,
I just think of it as like black, it's like when you're scared of the dark, you know, you can't see where you're going, it's like the darkness of ignorance.
Yeah, yep, and you can make a quick mistake. So these paths of action can be divided, like I said, into black and white. And on the black side, they're called ignoble, harmful, what is not Dharma. So Dharma is meant to protect you from suffering. So these 10 non-virtuous actions actually produce suffering. So we say, well, you know, they don't lead to protection from suffering, they actually produce suffering. They are polluted. Now, what they're always polluted with is ignorance. And ignorance, what it does is has a reifying factor within it. So it looks like the actions just exist sort of independently, not dependent upon anything. They're blameworthy, and they always lead to suffering. Whereas the noble paths are harmless, they are Dharma, unpolluted, blameless, and they always lead to happiness. So this is how these two sets of karmic paths were set out by the Buddha.
Are these karmic paths like decisions, like making good decisions or bad decisions?
Partly, but they also include what follows on after the decision.
So Ben's asked, are the three mental non-virtues, covetousness, malice and wrongdoings, are they called actions of intention?
Are they called?
Are they actions?
No. Oh, they are actions. Yeah, they are actions. They're karmic paths. Yeah. I can just wait for a couple of minutes, Ben, and we'll be right there. So he says, so systemizing the most obvious of them, the Buddha said the paths of action, virtuous and non-virtuous, are 10. You'll see shortly. So that all of these actions are made up of parts. In fact, anything that exists always has parts. So when any of the 10 non-virtues are done with all the branches intact, So all paths are in place. Then they become karmic paths because they lead to something. In particular, future rebirth. They can also lead to habitual behaviors. They can also lead to a particular type of experience and always be that type of experience. So the three mental non-virtues are karmic paths because they cause an intention and because they lead to unfortunate rebirths. Now, when we look at these karmic paths, here's a sort of a grid type thing that you might find useful. So karma, as we've been saying, is in general like an act. But the Buddha refined this to make it it's the act of intention. And so if you intend to do something, that's a karma right there. There's your karma starting. Anytime you intend to do something.
Is that another way of saying intended action or?
You can intend to do an action, and then when you do the action, there's an intention going along with that action. So you can see there's two parts there. One before you do the action, and then when you act, there's an intention that goes along with it. So here we have these karmic paths of these seven physical and verbal non-virtues and the three mental non-virtues. We could also just change them over and go seven physical and verbal virtues. Three mental virtues. But right along that, there's always this mental factor of intention. So intention is a karma, is karma. Right? Is it a karmic path? No. Is it an affliction? No. Now, these seven physical and verbal non-virtues, are they karma? Yeah. Are they a karmic path? Yep. Are they an affliction? No. Huh? Why? Ah, gotcha. I know why. Next one, three mental non-virtues. Are they karma? No. No, they're afflictions. So when our suffering is produced, it needs two things. Karma and affliction, and they're different. Karma and affliction are different. You need both to produce suffering. All the karmas come out of the afflictions. So of the two that are most important is affliction. If you don't remove the affliction, you can do a whole lot of stuff against the karma, but if the afflictions are still present, they'll produce new karma. New actions flow from these afflictions.
And the afflictions are the three poisons.
That's right. Yeah. The afflictions are in general the three poisons. Yeah. Yeah. So are these three mental non-virtues a karmic path? Yes.
Because they lead to a result.
That's right. That's right. They lead to something. They lead to like an action.
Oh, an action and then a result.
Yeah. Okay. Action and result. And they can also and they're also afflictions.
So because they're mental and they're non-virtuous, that's actually an affliction rather than a karma.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the three mental non-virtues are karmic paths because they cause an intention. And because they lead to unfortunate rebirths. The seven non-virtues of body and speech are karmic paths because they are the path that intention travels. To carry out the intention. And they're also the paths to unfortunate rebirth. Now, we commonly speak of these 10 destructive actions and the 10 constructive actions. However, technically, although all 10 are karmic paths, not all of them are karma or action, as you can see here. Three are only paths. Seven are not only paths, but are also actions. But the major thing to remember here is when you go through these 10, the three mental karmic paths are, in terms of the negative side, the wrong views, they're the worst. Then there is covetousness and malice. So that's mental stuff. It's not a karma.
Is that also because a karma is, so you're saying, like, you know, there's intention, there's an action, but it's to others, and because of the mental non-virtue, it's just in our own mind. We haven't done it to anybody.
I don't understand the question.
You know, when you lie, you lie to a person, there has to be another person involved. Or when you steal, there's someone's stuff that you're stealing. But with the mental non-virtues, there doesn't have to be anybody else involved. You can just be sitting there feeling malice or plotting revenge. Is that why it's not a karma? There's no action. I was just trying to figure out why it's not a karma.
Yeah, I don't think that would be the answer. This is a karmic path.
Yeah, but why isn't it a karma?
Because there's a fiction.
Oh, okay.
let's have a look at the action of killing, or even unwise sexual behavior. Right? So that's an action, isn't it? When you kill someone, you act it. If you engage unwisely with sexually with someone, there's an act going on, isn't there? What might be driving that act?
Anger
might drive that act, yeah.
Desire.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of things that could be driving, right? So that's intention there. That's the, if you could gut there, you could go a wrong view. You could say malice could be driving it, a wrong view. Covetousness could be driving it, pushing it along. So that's where their afflictions, they drive the action. When you engage with the action, there's another intention going along with it. Could be the same or it could change. Yep.
Ben's asking, are we ourselves harmed by our own mental karmic paths? So those three mental non-virtues, where we ourselves are harmed by those.
Oh, yeah, paths. Sure. But how are they expressed? Well, as you can see, it's either physically, verbally, or mentally. So in terms of the body, with these physical actions, their karma and karmic paths, it's just another way of doing the same thing with the grid before it. Right? Speech, their verbal actions, there are four of them, their karma and karmic paths. But mind, these mental actions, their karmic paths, and they are afflictions.
Also, going back just a couple of slides, Francesca asked, what is blameworthy and blameless, you know, the ignoble and the noble? What's the blameworthy refer to?
Well, the actions.
Yep. But why do they use that word? Like, you blame the action? You blame the ignoble?
Yeah, for sure. You don't blame the person.
Ah, right.
The person's not at fault, it's the actions. The actions that are producing the suffering, right? So this is the thing. You don't go and blame the people. This is another a real simple mistake to make, because the people are under the control of the karma and the delusion. But they don't. They don't have control over the situation. So when we put what's blameworthy, it's not the person. It's what's driving them. These bad intentions, and the unskillful actions that follow. There's a lovely quote, you know, where I remember reading this and got shocked and thought, oh my God, I've got to remember this. So it says, you know, so the Buddha, he's a fully awakened being, right? He's got rid of all his problems, he's produced all his good qualities, and we're different. We're not like that. So when the Buddha looks at people, he never sees blameworthy people. He never sees bad people. He never sees harmful people. None of those things. So what does he see? What is blameworthy? The afflictions. I see the afflictions driving all these people to behave in this way, which causes them suffering. I thought, wow, like that's so different than us, isn't it? Like we find it's so easy to forget, and what's important is
we conflate
the behavior and the person. So the person behaves badly, and then we go bad person.
In fact, we can't even see a good person or even a neutral person anymore.
That's right. Just the behavior. I mean, we make up our mind. That's it. And like I said, so the Buddha doesn't see that. That's what we do, and this is the mistake, one of the major mistakes. This is why I talk about, like, this is why it's so important to understand karma. What's driving the people to behave this way, and what's the effect of being driven this way? Yeah.
Lily's asking, is the karmic path a fully completed karma with all those four parts to it of, you know, motivation, object?
Sure, yeah,
yep.
If it is. Yeah.
And if it doesn't have all four, is it a karmic path or not yet?
Well, it's an incomplete karmic path.
Oh, okay.
It leads to something, but not to the rebirth step. And in fact, even if all parts are in place, it doesn't necessarily follow that it produces a rebirth. Because some parts of it might be very weak, as you'll see. So I'm just going to briefly go through the first two of the physical unskillful paths. It's sort of like just a very quick overview so you guys can get some idea of what happens. But so killing, as you know, it's a karma and it's a karmic path. It's the heaviest or the weightiest of the non-virtuous physical paths. So the physical paths involve killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior. They're the three major ones. Of those three, killing is the heaviest and unwise sexual behavior the lightest. Now, you can kill somebody motivated by desire, hatred, or ignorance. Any sentient being, any being with a mind. Yeah. And of course, the heaviest, of course, in terms of all the different forms of life you could take, you would find that the heaviest often spiritual teachers with realizations, then your parents, and then those people who are close to you and done very good things for you. Well, I've got a slide up about that to show you. But these four here, these first two, just to give you a quick snapshot of it. And you'll see when we go into the unwise sexual behavior how much is not in these others and what you can bring to it. But it's always completed with a sense of hatred.
So in terms of, say, the war in Ukraine, it's motivated probably by mostly, hatred, ignorance, a little bit of desire to, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's could be a whole mix, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Ben?
It's, I suppose we kind of kill with motivation.
I'm sorry, is it possible to?
Kill with motivation, like if you see a darkness,
yeah, that's right, finish. Sure. Yeah.
Is there,
yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
But it still leads like a bad kind of
It means that the bad karmic path is not completed. because the motivation of hatred was there. Yep, that's right. Yeah, no, this it could be desire in there, desire to protect your life. Yeah, so this get quite interesting when you sort of, what I've done before, it's like set up like a table. Boy, it doesn't get big. And then you start looking at all the parts and what's associated with each part. And you just ask these questions. And you sort of feel, oh, it's not a complete karmic part. Oh, it's not so heavy here. You know, so I won't bring about this outcome. But that's how you can sort of play around with it there. But anyway, tonight I'll show you all these different ways you can look at any action through the lens of karma. But it's like it's big. So in stealing, so it's a karma and it's a karmic path. It's less weighty than killing. But it's more weighty than sexual misconduct. It can be motivated by desire, hatred, or ignorance. So again, you know, when I put these things up, what I'd like to try and do is go, okay, so if I was to steal something out of desire, well, that's a simple one. So I want a comic, I want it now, I want it for me, I stole the comic out of desire, right? Just steal it out of hatred. My mate's got that comic, oh, not my mate, this other bloke I know has got a comic. I want it, I take it, I've got him. So take it. It's not really out of desire, it's malice. I want to hurt somebody. Yeah? Or ignorance. I just walk past the desk, pick up the pen. It's not my pen, but I've taken something that hasn't been freely given. And you've stolen. And so I also like to try and do this, is take any of the actions that come up and go, okay, if it says that, how? Can I make some examples up for myself? And then you can sort of look back at your own past and go, yeah, I've stolen before. Why, how, what did I do? So it's completed with desire. Now, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. So this is a term that come out through when we'll take that harm. And what was the term before? What's normal?
Sexual misconduct.
Sexual misconduct is the term that's more commonly known. But he said it's unwise and unkind. I quite like it. So it too is a karma and a karmic path. It's the lightest of the non-virtuous physical paths. It can be motivated by desire, hatred, or ignorance. It's always completed with desire. I'll just say a few words about the parts of the action, and then the next slide we'll look at these different presentations. So as I said before, every action is always made up of parts. Right? Like one of the first parts of any action is your motivation for doing it. So you're be motivated to do it, and then you'll do it. And then the action will finish. So there's, in really brief way, there's three parts to the action. But those, they can be built up, these three, to be four, five, six, seven, just breaking it down, each one. But whatever the action is, it always has a basis. There's always an attitude involved. There's the action. And there's the completion. So there's another way, just describe it now in four. Four parts, the basis, the attitude, action, and completion. And if we put in within the attitude, these three things. So the attitude, you have to correctly identify the person. It's a correct person. So in other words, we're engaging in unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Gosh, I hope I don't give you too many examples and they're all, you go,
examples.
Okay, you need some comic people. what's his name? Homer Simpson. So, okay, so Homer wants to go to bed with Marge. Huh? No, he doesn't. He wants to go to bed with Marge's sister. Does Marge have any sisters?
Yes.
Ooh, that's right. So he wants to have sex with Marge's sister. Come on in. And so that night, while everybody's sleeping, he creeps into the bedroom, hops into the bed with a woman he thinks is Marge's sister,
But it's the other sister.
But it's the other sister. Right? So it's not a complete path because is it actually intended to do with this sister, but it was the other sister. It's still a path, but it's not complete because he didn't correctly identify the person he wanted to engage with this unskillful action. His motivation was there, so that the fact that he actually intended to engage in this improper act. Got questions? Yeah.
Is this
kind of mistake would be less likely to happen with sexual behaviour than it would be with, say, stealing or killing. Like, you couldn't have an intention to steal someone's stuff, but you steal the other person's stuff.
You could go, like, you might go to steal one comic, steal a particular comic, and take a different comic.
Yeah.
So it's not confusing.
Get some boring old magazine instead by accident. And go,
steal one you've already read before.
That's
right. And then, of course, there's the delusion. And finally, there's the action. So he might have wanted to do one thing in bed with the person, but he ended up doing something else. So it wasn't complete.
The husband might have come home in the middle of it.
That's right. All sorts of things can happen. But when the action is completed, in terms of sexual misconduct, pleasure has to be experienced. So I remember the story of a nun being raped. And she went to Rinpoche, told what happened, and she said, at no time whatsoever did I feel any pleasure. And he said, your vows have not been broken. It's true.
Oh, her vows.
Her vows are never broken. So what's really interesting about these actions as we go through, what can be very interesting about it, is you can sort of evaluate your own behavior. Right. You know, because many of us, I'm sure, have done unskillful things that we might have thought worse of them. Or we might not have thought deep enough about it. But I remember myself thinking that I'd done something bad when I was much younger, and it really affected me heavily. And so I came across these teachings on karma, and went, oh, my God, this part's missing, this part is missing. Actually, I didn't do the complete action at all. So it was quite a weight lifted off, you know. So let's have a look at how an action, in particular this action, unwise and unkind sexual behavior, is constructed, made up of parts. So like I said, the simplest one is always an intention. There will be the behavior, the unwise and unkind sexual behavior, and it'll come to an end, and there'll be some sense of satisfaction there. If all the parts are there, it's a complete path. It could lead to a rebirth state in unfortunate realm. All the parts are in place. But the parts that have got to be in place have got to be of sufficient weight and strength. So here's another way of looking at it. So here we have what's called the basis. So this is the basis of the object or the sentient being who's acted on. The attitude has these three parts: a correct discernment of the object, the presence of an affliction, and the motivation to do the action. Then we actually perform the action. And it culminates in a sense of pleasure, of satisfaction. And, well, here's another way of looking at it. So you have the basis again. It's the object or the sentient being acted on. Perception here has got what's called the recognition, so the correct perception of the object, the attitude again, an affliction, and the conclusion. And is it, like I said, there's another one where there's even six parts in it. So you can just break it down. And the good thing about breaking it down to all those parts is you can go along and you can ask yourself, so what's my attitude? Was there a sense of satisfaction at the end? What was the affliction driving it? So you can sort of fill in a whole lot of gaps, right? And then go, okay, so in general, I can conclude from that that this would be the future result unless I do something about it. But the action's been done, but I can still do something. I can still stop the result of it. The cause is still there. The result has not yet happened. I don't want the result. I've got to stop the result. It's like when I look back at my life as a much younger person, there's lots of things I've never been caught for in the fight. It's just thinking, you know, you got away with them. And I remember reading a thing about when people, often criminals in particular, who are caught, what they're not caught for is about 70% of the other things they've done. That's not uncommon. So here it's like, you know, you don't get away with it. You only get away with the short term. It's just this life. Yeah, okay, you never got caught. You never went to jail. You didn't go to court. Lucky you.
It's like,
you think.
Love Yeshua says, right? Karma takes care. So you may not get caught now, but karma will.
Yeah, that's right. You put into place a cause to bring about an effect. And the effect is going to catch you unless you do something about it. So, as Holiness says, it's important to appreciate that since there are different stages to every act, karmic actions or karmic acts are themselves composite, meaning that, you know, they're also made up of parts, many, many parts, and their quality can be characterized as the cumulative result of each of those parts. So, for instance, you know, like if you find yourself, Miffy and I just finished watching a great show
called Time. It's on the ABC.
So it's about a man who finds himself in jail for killing a person. Right? So he was drunk. He was a school teacher. He got drunk. He ran this bloke over. He felt so bad about it, guilty about it. Went to jail. Went to court. Of course, I'm guilty. So that's he has. Like I said, kill somebody whose intention wasn't to kill them. And so he got a sentence. Right? Now, I could compare that to somebody else who actually deliberately killed somebody and was glad to have done it and had no remorse. Well, if you go after court like that, right, the judge is going to give you a very different sentence than one where you had a lot of remorse, was accidental, and so forth. Right? And it's the same thing with karma. It depends on what's the intention, how heavy is it, what's driving it. All
so
those
you
other
did
things.
Something when you're young and stupid and you have no idea the amount of karma it might do.
Mm-hmm.
That's less heavy karmically than if you intend to set out to really destroy somebody.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, so you often, you know, court cases, in the case, the judge might say or somebody will say, you've shown no remorse. And that has a major impact on the sentencing. And it's the same thing with karma, right? It's like, what was the intention driving it? Is there, at the end of it, was there satisfaction? Are you glad that you did this? Because it might not be. So that's why it's important to have all these parts and to go through them. But then at the very same time, we've got to keep remembering, yeah, the action's done, well, karma increases. You know, we've got to keep remembering that, the action's been done, it's set up in place a cause for something, and that cause could increase. The effect of the cause could increase. So that's why Lama Yoko often said, he says, you know, like you're mad if you don't confess every night. If you don't go through the purification process, you're actually mad. He says, well, we basically are, aren't we? Just at different degrees. So let's have a look now at some of these dangers and ways of looking at this behavior. And remember, this goes for every action. I've also known for killing, stealing, lying, all of them. But here's the thought in terms of physical non-virtuous actions, we're probably more likely to get involved with this in some unwise sexual.
Well, there's certainly more of it on the telly as well. I mean, it's like the Australian relationship and sex education is all just, you know, the Love Boat and Love Island. And I mean, I just, what hope do we have?
Or else it's lots of killing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, lots of killing.
That sounds these two sides. Anyway, let's have a look. So in stages, the first thing is your basis. Right? So this could be an improper person, improper orifice, time or place. So remember here, what we're trying to do is get out of cycle of existence or make sure that we have a good future rebirth. So there's a whole lot of restraint put upon me. And actually, we're putting the restraints on ourselves. We're the ones that have to go through. It's not imposed from outside here. We're just looking at, okay, suppose I like a particular type of sexual activity. What you'll find is your like of it will increase. So then your desire and clinging to the behavior, to the feelings increase, which makes it really, really hard then to separate yourself off from this desire. There's no, you're sort of locked, you lock yourself in. Liberation is called a state of freedom. So this is not being free. You're locking yourself into a particular way of behavior. So here they say they're wrong people you can have sex with, wrong orifices, wrong time, and wrong places. And in the Labyrinth Chenma, they describe all of this, go into every quite a lot of detail. Like, you know, you shouldn't have sex right next door to your lama's room. Shouldn't be having sex in, like, the Gompa. There's lots of different places.
As the Labyrinth Chenma, but also heaps of SBS movies go through each one of these things too.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, so there are different times. So this is, you know, please don't do it, like, on a holy day. There's all sorts of wrong people that you shouldn't have sex with.
So is that then, so for a holy day, because all the karma is magnified, then we want to be doing, you know,
virtuous things on holy things, days.
Yeah, yeah, not increasing our attachment and bondage to samsara.
Sure. Second thing is the attitude. That's a... you have to correctly identify the person with whom you wish to have intercourse. The motive is you intend to engage in this act. The delusion is any of the three poisons. So the attachment, using others for your own sexual pleasure without caring for their feelings. You know, there's the people, it's just, there's a lot. So here it says, so any of the three poisons with attachment, using others for your own sexual pleasure without caring about their feelings. Angrily raping the partners or children of an enemy. So you know this happens, eh? This man, when the war in Yugoslavia was going, war, this is what happens. Ignorantly thinking that sex is a high spiritual practice, that's chic to have extramarital affairs, or that having protected sex isn't necessary when there is the possibility of sexually transmitted diseases. So this is the most important part of this act, because in it you have the motivation, the perception, all these things. So this is the driving thing, the affliction. So that's going to create the act. So the performance. In terms of the meeting of the two organs. So that's the male and female sexual organ. Right? So you might think, oh, what about hands and all these things? No, it's this. This is it specifically. And completion is when pleasure is experienced. And climax is not necessary. That's just a feeling of a good feeling. You like what you've done. Now, these are the four parts. And like I said before, you could put five parts, six parts, three parts. But I'll put it like this because when it comes to purifying them, there's four parts that match each of these parts, and that's how the process of purification takes place. And you can actually stop this cause producing its result through using the purification practice. And it's got four parts here.
So Francesca is asking, how much purification practices do we have to do when we have a lot of remorse for our younger, ignorant lives.
Remorse is good. Like that's the great thing. The only way I can answer that, like, truthfully, within a set of sort of safety frame, is that you find yourself reborn as a human being, leisure and opportunity again. So I'd say, how do you know? Well, take a higher rebirth, liberation, or enlightenment. You get some signs along the way, but like I'm saying, you never know, because the most important part is what happens just before death. Yeah, because that mind there is really important. So you might, like I said, do a lot of good purification now, but at the time of death, your mind is not stable, but it thinks something incorrect, and that's problematic.
So if we have remorse for our younger, ignorant lives, but we don't purify, so we don't say have a remedy, or we don't do the whole purification process, then it's not enough. But so if we do the full purification.
So the major two ones here are remorse and the promise to never do it again. Those two have got to be there. They're the most important two parts of any purification practice. This is, you actually know you've made a mistake, and please, you don't look at yourself and beat yourself up here. This is why I say you look at
the action.
It's the action that produces terrible results for you. You engage the action. So don't berate yourself. Yeah, so the mouth, hand, anus, things like this. That's what I said, Stephen. You weren't here, I take it, when I talked about this.
No, he wasn't here.
Right? Yeah, so, Stephen, this whole presentation.
You don't have to yell, it's on the
microphone. Sorry, I'm just at the back of the room and I've got to talk louder. So, Stephen, yeah. So, this presentation is really about.
Well, we're trying to reach liberation, aren't we? It's not just about having it.
We're trying to. Okay, so our goals here are enlightenment, liberation, and rebirth as a human being with the leisure and opportunity to engage in the spiritual path again. That's the goals. So you think, okay, so let's say we engage in different orifices because that's our predilection. What's that going to do for us?
Going to have a good time.
What's it going to do? It's going to increase our sexual desire, isn't it? We like it. We're going to keep doing it. That means we actually hinder ourselves from getting a future human rebirth, deletion, opportunity, liberation, or enlightenment. So that's what we've got to keep remembering, the context of this presentation. You can have relationships like that. You have better relationships, that's for sure. So this is what we're sort of getting at here, Bev, is this this way of restraining ourselves, like restraint, restraint, restraint. Why? So the desire doesn't increase, the desirous attachment. That's the whole purpose.
And that's quite different from our culture where, you know, there's all the marriage counselling about after you've been together for however long, how you can spice your marriage up and create more desire.
So as you see, there's a lot of restraints. So really, so this is for the person who's on a, you know, spiritually involved, interested. It's not for ordinary. If you're not that inclined, then of course, you know, you've got to get involved in desirous activity, aren't you? Why would you restrain yourself? So I guess the weight of every action. So the weight really depends upon the attitude. So, you know, sure, we could do something out of anger, but that anger or dislike, but it can be increased all the way up, couldn't it be really ramped up? So you could have intense hostility. So I remember reading about the camps in Yugoslavia. So I don't know if you guys remember this, but they used to put, they just turned cold concentration camps into women and the men over here, and the guys that would guard them would go there, massively rape all the women, and the idea was to make them pregnant. So this is the intention. So you have perhaps Muslims in the camp, and then you have the enemies, and they have sex with these Muslim women, so that they have this child. So it's done out of hate, spite. So That's one way, you know, there's intense hostility. Of course, there's desire, but it can also be just like an indifference towards the other person. So that's not uncommon either. People, like somebody just want to get your rocks off because they don't really care about the person. So this attitude, of course, can be sort of like, can be really ramped up or would come down. The performance. So I mean, what I'm putting here is like weighty, making it heavy, right? You just think, well, it's got to be light. You just take out these things. Yeah, so not with hostility, not with great desirous attachment. So the performance can be with glee. So this is like on the negative side, remember here. So with glee, with elaborate preparations, habitually, repeatedly, and for a long length of time. So I just took out each of these little headings from the Lamrim Chenmo, because like I said, it goes into quite a lot of depth in all these
And this kind of weightiness of the unwise behavior also kind of, it's like a vicious circle, because say addiction to pornography, you know, you get more and more addicted with more and more involvement.
Yeah, sure. So the absence of an antidote. So this, you know, this is making it heavy. You know, so sometimes, you know, suppose that you were engaged in pornography, but you had a sense of embarrassment about it or shame. You know, so you would not engage so often because it's an antidote to it. But in other words, if you didn't have it, well, you'd be full on. No remorse about it or confession. So when these things are brought in, when there is shame, embarrassment, remorse, it straight off decreases the weight of it.
So
which makes the effect, the result, the final result kind of be different too.
If you've been having an affair and then you get caught out, and then if you, I mean, people often try to not be embarrassed or to get all, you know, aggressive back again instead of feeling shame or embarrassment about being caught. So is it about being caught or about for oneself's own action?
I'm not sure what you're asking there.
So is the shame about feeling shame oneself or embarrassment oneself, or about if you're caught out?
Well, it's up to you.
In terms of this, like, is it, you know, if you're having an affair and then you get caught out and you're embarrassed being caught, is that an antidote?
You're embarrassed for being caught, not embarrassed.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
Not embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here would be the embarrassment. You'd go, so I'm not embarrassed to have an affair, you could say. Why? Because I don't, if you, I don't mind sort of being caught. I don't mind being known as a philanderer or whatever the term is. Right? So there's no embarrassment there. Whereas if I said, no, that I would be embarrassed, like for myself, suppose I was having an affair and it came out, right, and everybody in the class said, I'd be going, oh, my God, I couldn't bear that. To come up here and teach about the Buddha Dharma, and yet here I am doing exactly acts contrary to it. So that'd be incredibly embarrassing. So you've got to sort of think about it and go, so I'm not engaging with it. So I'm not doing that. I'm not going to get caught up as if I were caught, if I come, it'd be hugely embarrassing to me. So that stops me doing it. But if you have no embarrassment about that, you go ahead and do it. Nothing can stop you.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get lots of distorted ideas or wrong views. So depend upon how deep those are, like those guys in the concentration camp that I just mentioned. So that's really deeply wrong views and quite perverted as well. So that's much more heavier than somebody doing it for doing something else. And then again, the basis, the object, the improper persons, orifice, time, or placing in. This also has some bearing on the weight of the activity. They're weighty because of what the result that comes.
The harm or the...
Yeah, yeah. They produce the worst results. That's the thing.
In the basis, then that's, say, you know, vulnerable people would be more weighty than...
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're vulnerable people. Yeah, they've got a list there. It's like
the young, the old,
the sick people you need to be looking after. Your mother, relatives, wives of close friends, nuns, probationary nuns. Yeah.
So the vulnerable and the virtuous makes it more weighty.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes, yeah, so, and vulnerable, virtuous. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, strength. So the recipient, an improper partner, family, child, ordained, vow holder, orifice, time, or place. The object is unwise and unkind sexual activity. A support. So with knowledge, you can decrease this, you can decrease the strength. But if you don't have knowledge, then the strength, of course, increases. Yeah, so that's why, you know, when we teach this, it's like for us to go, okay, so if I've already created negative activities in the past and I was sort of happy with that, now I need to rethink that, you know, because we have new knowledge and regret those things that we've done in the past. We go, now not only do I need to regret it, I've got to make sure I don't do it again. And in recompense, I want to do this and that. I said, you carry it through. And of course, the attitude.
Oh,
I know. Of course, you'd be asking. Okay. Now, here are the different types of result you can get. So, this is what's called a ripening result. And the ripening result is basically the rebirth result. Then there's the causally concordant result. There's two there, experience and behavior. And finally, the environmental result. So, with this topic, really, in many ways, the way it's presented, this comes towards the end. But in many ways, what you want to do is learn about this pretty quickly, the result of all these other skillful actions. Because, like I said, we don't want the result, so we should know what we don't want. And you go, okay, that's the effect or result. It must have causes. The causes were these ones here. Okay, I've done them. How did I do them? Like this. I also know karma increases. I've got to make sure I don't get that result. So I'm going to do my purification practices. I'm going to work against having that effect take place. So let's look at these. So the ripening result is the fruition. There are three different levels. Small, rebirth as an animal. Medium, rebirth as a hungry ghost. And lastly, rebirth is the being in the hells. So remember, this is on the negative side. The positive side is, it goes out the other way. It goes human beings in the God realms. In terms of the causally concordant result, so if you're engaging in unwise sexual behaviors, and at present or have done in the past, like suppose you had done in the past lives, for instance. So for my way of thinking, I often think, I said, look, I don't know what I've done in the past, but I'm going to assume I've done everything. Because the lives you've had are so many. You can't even say I had one past life, two, three. You go, it's beginningless. So if I go like that, I could have done anything. I mean, there's people in the world, you know, a little while ago, they're just guys going to the shop, around the shop, next thing they're concentration guards and they're raping people. It's like, man, the things that people do in the world, just look at history, aren't it? You go, oh my gosh, I could do that in the future. I might have done it in the past. I'll assume I will or I have. I'm going to purify, I'm going to do my purification actions. Now, suppose you find yourself in this life having a divorce, going through a divorce. Right? That's an effect. So, well, what would cause that? You say, no, I didn't play up on my wife. So, yeah, all right, in the past lives. In this life, you're playing up, you're breaking up things. If yours has broken it, what do you think that, what caused it?
Yeah, because I know people who been incredibly loyal and they just get cheated on relationship after relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're kind of like, what's going on here?
Yeah. So as that happens, you go, this is the result of this past act and my unskillful behaviors in the past, my unskillful sexual behaviors in the past. Now it ripens. I didn't do anything this time, but my partner wants to leave me. But that's really useful because otherwise you're sitting there going, why me? Like, it's not fair. You got all sorts of things that shouldn't happen to me. But if you have the effect, it should happen because you put down the cause. And it's helpful to know what those causes could be. So if you have gone through a number of different breakups, so you find you never attract partners who you have stable relationships, you've got to go, okay, basically I'm sort of a decent person in this life. That's got to be passed up. I've got to do something about it. In fact, one of the tables that are, I think in the handout, man, it's terrific. It's got all these effects. And then you can track it back and go, this is the cause. And some of those causes, you look at it and you go, you never pick it. You know?
And so then the benefit of that is to then know, well, okay, no matter what, I'll never cheat on my partner, even though cheat on me. Whereas commonly, you know, then you just go have a revenge affair and cheat back.
But the other thing is, it happens that the results corresponding to the behavior. So then, of course, then you know your marriages do break up,
or you're a breaker upperer.
So with the results corresponding to experiences, there's often a lot of marital disharmony, a disagreeable or unfaithful spouse, and then the behavior, you have the tendency to do it again now. So I had a mate that he used to love doing this, and it was like that song, the married men, the married men. So it's sung from a point of view of a woman, saying she only wants to have these affairs with married men because it's safest. And my mate used to want to have affairs with married women because it was safest. But he just used to keep doing this. So this is this behavior. It just keeps on increasing. So what this is, one of the things, you know, like what they call karmic behavior that just follows on because you've done it before. In fact, it's the worst result you can get. Now, because we find ourselves like this as human beings, we keep doing that behavior, we keep hitting ourselves in the lower arms. And then, there's an environmental result. So what it means is that, you know, here you might find yourself in a really swampy land area,
marshy,
smelly environment. There's an environmental effect also. So so we find, okay, so the major fruitional effects are the lower realms and the hells, right? So we look at ourselves and go, well, we missed it. We're here. We didn't get that fruitional effect, but we missed it that time. Great, we're here as humans. So what sort of effects do we get? Sure. You might find the environmental effect, the behavioral effect, effects similar to the causes, the experience. The first thing what they do in terms of the training, the structured training, is they start off with like your body and the speech. So it's just like, just stop doing these things. Because like I said, if you keep doing them, you just stay normal. There's no way you can develop deep states of concentration. There's no way you can develop the wisdom. So this ethical behavior of restraint gives you a chance to develop concentration and the wisdom to get out. As long as you keep engaging in the behaviors, you won't have room for that. The Buddha said, possessed of my own deeds, I am the inheritor of deeds, kin to deeds, one who has deeds as a refuge. So you want to make sure that you have good deeds as your refuge, right? So you'd be happy rather than unhappy. Whatever deeds I shall do, whether good or evil, I shall become the heir of it. That's, you know, thing to remember. Like for me, it's like, you know, I say, yeah, I got away with a lot of criminal acts in this lifetime. I didn't get the sentences for them and so forth, but I haven't got away. I just escaped the law here. And sure, I could have done the time for them, but I'll do the time in some other way. If I don't stop that behavior, then stop the effects of the causes that are in place. Oh, I don't know what you can take away from this. Let's try something, right?
Again. Waiting my
yeah. yeah, well, that's what we should do, actually. The discussion now is focused upon unkind and unwise sexual behavior. It is one of the 10 physical behaviors. It's one of the 10 non-virtuous behaviors you can engage in. It's one of those three done with the body. It's the least harmful. Well, what I'd like you to know is that action, being unkind and unwise sexual behavior, is made up of parts. It always has a beginning. There's a middle part where you do the act and the act finishes, it concludes. Right? A beginning, middle, and end. And you can break it up into the basis, the affliction, or the attitude, the performance, and the culmination. But every action is made up of these parts. And as you can see here, these parts have weight and strength involved in them. So they can produce all sorts of weird effects. But if the action is completed, it's got all the parts completed, 3, 4, 5, or 6, all done, sufficiently heavy and weighty, that could produce a rebirth effect. So if it's negative, it's going to be a negative result. Yep, it sure is. Yep, that's right. And I can just go, here's the problem, good luck. No, if there wasn't something we could do about it, then I wouldn't tell you all this. Yeah.
Anne said, thanks. I understand this section a lot more attending this unit the second time around. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, so first time up, it's like, oh, massive overflow with too much knowledge, too much. You probably can't take much away. Do it a few times, read about it enough times, and it becomes clear and sort of more malleable, I guess. So we'll do one of these on the next one, we do on speech. And then the last one, I think we do on the mind. So I'll just take one of each section and then bring it to the thing of how to purify the action. Now we have some notes and stuff up online. So on pages 65 to 67, 74 to 92 on the LTC notes, 7 to 9, 18 to 36. And coming up, we'll look at the karmic paths of speech, in particular, offensive speech. I was like, that's
tricky.
Isn't it? So we the four speeches, of course, are lying, offensive or harsh speech, gossip, and
divisive speech.
Each of these has weight and strengths too. But obviously, I'll just do one at a time. And remember, I mean, it's a lot of stuff to take in. Take your time with it. And if you have a Dharma book or something that breaks all the stuff down, which they often do, you can read up a bit more in there. And of course, think about the stuff, right? So maybe next week, if you have a question or two about it, even now, if you have a question, just ask it. Any questions online for you? Okay, let's dedicate what we've done then. So we've been listening to this talk on unwise and unskillful speech.
Sexual
speech, sexual behavior. We've created some merit, so let's dedicate it. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of the Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space endures, and as long as sentient beings abide, may I too remain to the soul of sorrows of the world. Don't do it. Okay, thank you, everyone. Enjoy yourself.